This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Harvard professor Harvey Mansfield has whipped up a small storm in the last few weeks with his call for the new embrace of an old idea, manliness. Manly men. Men acting manly, says Mansfield, are what this world needs more of. John Waynes and Teddy Roosevelts and Papa Hemingways and Schwarzeneggers striding the modern range and getting things done. The post-feminist dream of a gender-neutral society, says Mansfield, has hurt both men and women, and it's time to bust out the manly men inside. Critics are agog with Cheney and Rumsfeld and W on the march. They ask, is that not enough Saddleburn? Up next on Point, Harvey Mansfield on manly men and the call for more manliness. We will be joined later in this hour by the feminist and Mansfield critic Katha Pollitt. But first, joining me now in the studio is Harvey Mansfield. He's professor of government at Harvard University and a leading authority on Machiavelli and Alexis de Tocqueville. He's been at Harvard for over 50 years, first as a student and then as professor. He's often been at the center of controversial campus debate over feminism and multiculturalism and affirmative action. His new book is Manliness. Harvey Mansfield, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, no mean man himself, senior editor of the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Professor Mansfield.
Hello.
Harvey Mansfield, is it manly to talk this much and write this much about manliness?
Not altogether, no. I observe manliness. I'm not 100% advocate of it. Some people say manliness doesn't exist. Others say it does exist and it's bad. I say it exists and it's good and bad.
You're getting a rootin-tootin' response to this book. What's your definition of manliness?
Confidence in a situation of risk. It's something that men have more than women, and a few men have superbly, I think you could say. I don't say that women are excluded from it, but you don't find it as often among them.
Confidence in a situation of risk. Give us some more descriptors there. You've got a lot more in the book. Flesh out the picture.
Yes. I'm thinking of the take-charge guy who comes on a situation and sees that something needs to be done and not reluctantly but willingly, even sometimes eagerly, seizes the opportunity and does what he can. Now, that's also matched by another manly type who is aloof and looks at the same situation and may say, I didn't get people into this, and it's up to them to get out. And so manliness has a kind of independence and aloofness on the one side and a kind of responsibility, take-charge notion on the other.
Give us some representative icons in your view. Who are your primo manly men?
Well, John Wayne would be the number one movie manly man, and if you look at his movies, you see that they often end, they always have a woman in them, and they often end either as a situation in which the woman gets him and Wayne surrenders and becomes responsible and starts a family, or perhaps in the most famous one, The Searchers, you see him walking off into the sunset. So there is an example of a manly man who does both the manly things.
You say that manliness is 50-50, good and bad. An interesting example you give, 9/11. You say the rescuers who went into the World Trade Center, the firemen and policemen to rescue those people, were very manly. Yeah. You also say the attackers, manly. If 9/11's the example, I mean, it looks like a horrible wash once you're done with it. Why are you promoting manliness if what it produces is burning towers and dead men inside?
I'm observing manliness and saying that we have no way to deal with it in our what I call gender-neutral society, a society where, as you said at the beginning, your sex is meant to matter as little as possible. It doesn't give you your rights or your duties or your place. And manliness is a quality that gets in the way. Yes, I think it is a positive thing on the whole, and so perhaps more than 50-50.
50-50, your words.
Yeah, more than 50-50, right. But It's a it doesn't just cancel out itself, but it gives men a sense, or it gives us human beings a sense of our importance.
Manliness
what a,
you know, does.
What a manly man does is to call attention to himself and to something that he's attached to, his cause, his country, his party, his family, something like that.
Is the country suffering a deficit of manliness right now, Harvey Mansfield?
I don't say that it is. There's plenty of manliness around, but what I do say is that it's unemployed. It doesn't have an honest and honorable employment because our thinking doesn't accommodate it. Our thinking prefers the gender-neutral society, and if you go with that, in which men and women are not just equal but interchangeable, then I think there is no place for manliness.
Where do women fit into the world of manliness that you describe? And do they suffer when manliness is unemployed, your word?
I think they do. Women are great critics of manliness. I think in the economy of the sexes, that is perhaps their most important function.
The economy of the sexes. What do you mean by that?
The economy of the sexes, I think the sexes are different, but that their differences are to some extent counterparts. So men are more valuable in a situation of risk. Women are good at pointing out that men often take foolish risks and that their daring is often dangerous and needs to be restrained.
You write that you hope to convince skeptical readers and, above all, educated women that irrational manliness deserves to be endorsed by reason.
Yes.
Why? Why? Irrational manliness. You're making it sound scarier.
I do. I don't try to make it into 100% good quality or a simple virtue. It is irrational because manly men insist on their own importance, often without just cause. It's very easy for them to.
Why should educated women embrace that?
Well, because it's a necessary quality to handle situations where the cause is just, and where you need defense against outraged manliness. So it's something that is in the nature of human beings, and especially males. And if males aren't going to go away, manliness is not going to go away. So women need to come to terms with it, so I think more reasonably than they've done before. And that's what I try to help them, and others too, with this book.
That's so good of you. manly men. Men need it, women need it, says Harvey Mansfield. His new book is Manliness. My manly buddy, Jack Beatty, what do you make of the argument?
Well, Professor Mansfield's hero, and he's one of the leading authorities on Tocqueville, he saw the Democratic Revolution as almost providential, irresistible. Nothing could stop it. And it was based on an idea of equality of condition. And that was the opposite of the aristocratic idea, the one that he had grown up with. And indeed, he had lost some relatives to the guillotine in the French Revolution. Mm. And that idea is based on this, that by reason of birth, some people are superior to others. Well, you know, that has been true of men for millennia. By reason of birth, they were superior to women. In our own time, the Democratic Revolution has finally touched that and begun to erode that idea of privilege. And it seems to me that when women want, quote, that manliness is another way of saying caste privilege, and that when women want some of that, that when they want to be, for example, taken seriously, when they want spiritedness, when they want deference, when they want confidence, they're simply saying we want these caste privileges for ourselves. They're not saying that they're not trying to denature themselves by seeking after manliness. They're seeking after, you know, ruling class privileges that they have been debarred from by accident of their birth. It's the Democratic Revolution being fulfilled.
Harvey Mansfield, are you the reactionary back at the ramparts defending male privilege when you speak up for manliness?
No, I don't think it's reactionary. It's just sensible. And I think most women recognize that there is a considerable difference between men and women in point of aggression or assertiveness, the two perhaps main qualities of manliness. I don't think that manliness is a caste privilege. It's a natural inclination which human beings have to come to terms with one way or another.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a call for the return of manly men in a gender-neutral society. My guest is Harvard professor Harvey Mansfield. He also talks about John Wayne. Let's get a little bit of the Duke in our ear. Here's John Wayne, the epitome of American Hollywood manliness, in his last film, The Shootist. He plays J.B. Books, a gunfighter dying of cancer. Here he passes down a final lesson in manliness to young Gillum Rogers, played by Ron Howard.
Mr. Books?
Yeah?
How'd you ever kill so many men?
Well, I lived most of my life in the wild country, and you set a code of laws to live by.
What laws?
I won't be wronged. I won't be insulted. I won't be laid a hand on. I don't do these things to other people, and I require the same from them.
But how could you get into so many fights and then always come out on top? I nearly tied you shooting.
Friend, there's nobody up there shooting back at you. It isn't always being fast or even accurate that counts. It's being willing. I found out early that most men, regardless of cause or need, aren't willing. They blink an eye or draw a breath before they pull a trigger. I won't.
John Wayne, manly man, in his last film, The Shootist. My guest is Harvey Mansfield, author of the new book, Manliness. He's with me in the studio. We're joined right now as well from New York by Katha Pollitt, columnist for The Nation, author of the forthcoming book, Virginity or Death. Katha Pollitt, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What do you think of Harvey's argument? Manliness is out there. We've got to recognize it and use it.
I think I would be much happier if he called that quality, the sort of good aspects of that quality, heroism, courage, something more, as it were, gender neutral. But because I do think that many, many women have this this quality of confidence in a situation of risk he's talking about. But if I could just say one thing.
Please.
John Wayne is a movie star. He is not the part he plays. That is a work of fiction. John Wayne, the person, is playing a part that is written for him by other people. He's wearing makeup. He is not a manly man.
But how does that matter if the screen character is the icon? Is it just the same?
No, it's not just the same. That's like saying that Hamlet is a real, you know, tells you something about what people in Denmark are like. No, these are the Westerns are a mythology. That's not the way the real West was. That's not the way real people are. A real person who went around shooting anybody who laid a hand on him would be a very busy serial killer.
We've got a policy of preemption in this country now. We're busy. So do you think Harvey Mansfield is what? Is he trying to just claim heroism for one gender?
Yes, he's trying. This is all a very complicated way of saying men are better than women. Men are braver. They know more. They're smarter. People should defer to them, the role of women is to nurture men and to criticize them every now and then so they don't go completely off the rails, but basically men are where it's at. And, you know, I read his book last night, and what's really funny about it is after this entire, you know, over 100 pages of how great men are, then he says, well, okay, in the public world, men and women should be equal. But in the private world, no. Women should do the housework. And why should they do the housework? Because men have contempt for tasks that women do. Now, I ask you, do you think that is the foundation of a happy marriage? Women should vacuum because men have contempt for it because women do it. I mean, to me, it's divorce city right there, and I think we should have Mrs. Mansfield on the program.
Harvey Mansfield, let us put it to you. Katha Pollitt and others say this is a long-winded way of putting men back on top. Is that what your project is here? And what about women's work?
No, I'm not trying to put men back on top. I don't say that men are superior in everything. I think they're only superior to women in manliness. And manliness is not all virtue. It certainly needs to be counteracted by restraint and moderation that women show. men find it easier to be manly than women do, and women find it easier to be moderate.
Why not use words like heroic or courageous or assertive? Why put the gender piece on it?
Because that would beg the question whether the quality is specific or, as I say, sort of hovers over the male sex more than the female sex.
And John Wayne as movie character, does it matter what he stands for? Catherpollitt says it's like calling Hamlet representative of the Dutch, of the Danes.
I see that. And in fact, at the end of my book, I do call representatives of all kinds, including actors, unmanly because they aren't showing themselves for what they are, which is, I think, a manly quality. But it's very important that people watch and identify John Wayne as manly. You could say he's a bad actor because he's typecast. All he could play was manly roles.
You also look to real and other fictional characters: William James, Teddy Roosevelt, Hemingway, Plato, Aristotle, and Tarzan. Why Tarzan?
Tarzan's smarter than you think, so I. I put him in
to
show.
That's a high recommendation.
Yes,
I'm really impressed.
Yeah,
Catherpollitt, what do you hear in this? Is this pushback against the gender equality movement of the last 50 years, or is this coming to terms with real gender differences? As Harvey Mansfield says, it's getting real about gender.
No, I think Harvey Mansfield just doesn't like feminism. He just likes the world the way it was back when. You know, he was a young guy before all this happened. I want to say, though, you know, democracy, he said earlier, you know, feminism and democracy that says people are all alike. This is not true. Democracy does not say people are all alike, and feminism doesn't say men and women are all alike. What both of these philosophies say is that they have equal rights and responsibilities and are equally entitled to the goods of life and also to the scut work of life. And this seems very fair to me. And I think you're finding in two career couples that men and women are living lives that are closer in their roles than, say, we would have found 100 years ago or even 50 years ago, and that this is happier for people. I think it's really great that men are much more involved with their kids than they were a couple of generations ago, and I think it's really great that women are getting to develop the public sides of their characters, and I just don't see what the problem is with this.
So, Harvey Mansfield, what's the problem?
Well, I agree with that statement. I think it is easier now that men and women have careers, and I think that is a solid accomplishment of feminism, and it would be good if women would be satisfied with the degree of manliness which they can show. But it isn't the case that they have as much of it as men.
Well, you keep
and it's the same
that,
thing
you
with
have
men.
To prove it.
Men don't actually do 50% of the housework as they ought to do, according to the gender-neutral principle. They do about a third. And that hasn't changed a lot in the last two generations. So,
well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because I read that in your book. You actually said that it hadn't changed since 1955, and I did a little research, and this is really not true. Men, you know, the big leap was by 1975, men were doing a lot more, and it's getting better little by little by little. I'm not saying it's fair, but, you know, that's really neither here nor there. I mean, that's sort of like saying, you know, black people aren't equal, so that shows that they're inferior. I mean,
no, I don't say that people who do housework are inferior.
No, my point is that the fact that there's still a lot of inequality between the sexes does not prove at all that inequality is innate or the way things ought to be or the way things will be. I don't think we really know what life is going to be like for the genders in 100 years.
Harvey Mansfield writes,
possible to know.
He writes, is it possible to teach women manliness and thus to become more assertive, or is that like teaching a cat to bark? Harvey Mansfield, Catherpollitt, Jack, stand by. So many listeners want to join this conversation. I want to invite them in. Johnny is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Johnny. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Good. I'd like to begin my remarks by saying that I am a decorated combat veteran. And this next thing I'd like to say is that the examples you have given of John Wayne and Teddy Roosevelt are both complete, utter frauds.
Why?
John Wayne chose not to serve America. John Wayne chose to stay on a B-movie lot during World War II.
Mm.
When America called, I answered. And for John Wayne to be put up as a emblem of American manhood is a slap in the face to all of us who served America.
Do you think the country needs to exercise, American men need to exercise manliness more, Johnny, as a combat vet?
As a combat vet, this is what I'd like to say. What I've heard the professor argue for will lead America's youth to slaughter. No, there is no such thing as manliness if it means that we assert willy-nilly our will around the world because we are manly.
We hear it, Johnny. Straight up, Harvey Mansfield, let me ask you. I mean, the women's movement really came into gear in mid-20th century, a century that had seen huge wars and huge slaughter, very manly undertakings, as you described them. I mean, maybe there's a reason that people pull back a bit from manliness. Maybe the record, was so bathed in blood, people said, wait a minute, let's put that on the sidelines a little bit for a little while here. And you hear Johnny saying, this is the path to slaughter. You say, manliness seeks and welcomes drama and prefers times of war, conflict, and risk. Johnny says that's the path to slaughter.
Well, if you are in a war, then there is risk, and you need manliness to get out of it, if that's what the prudent thing is to do.
Does manliness not take us to war?
Well, maybe it did, but to deal with it... you need manliness to defeat the bad manliness of others. How did we defeat communism and fascism? Not by sitting by and doing nothing. We sent our troops out there, and it may be that that the combat veteran that we just heard from was one of them. So I think you can't blame everything bad on manliness when it takes manliness to defend ourselves against everything bad.
Jack Beatty, I want to turn to you for a moment here. Harvey says when the chips are down, manliness is what you've got to have to cut the mustard.
Yeah, but I prefer Cather's way of putting it. Courage is what you've got to have. The ability to stand on principle. The capacity to stand alone, even. If we were to take our image of what is the fiercest resistant in nature, the person who would fight hardest for anything, it would be a mother for her child. That's almost our model for self-sacrificing courage in defense of something. So I really think that privileging this and calling it manliness is it's part of that caste. It's trying to claim for this caste universally available virtues, and virtues that we all recognize as having dangerous sides, war, identification with authority, the vaunting of violence, but also have very good sides, courage, willfulness, the ability to prevail. So I don't think we get very far by putting a sexual label on that. That's available to all human beings.
Katha Pollitt?
I'd like to just jump in here. Another manly man that Professor Mansfield mentions as showing, a lot of confidence in the situation of risk is, interestingly enough, Donald Rumsfeld. Well, I mean, he showed a lot too much confidence in a situation of risk. I mean, a lot of people blame him for the complete lack of preparation for the post-war period of the war in Iraq, for sending in too few troops, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a very wonderful piece in today's Washington Post by Ruth Marcus, in which she says manliness is exactly the problem with the Bush administration. They go rushing into war, they in a very unprepared way. They won't change their path one iota. They'll never admit they're wrong, no matter how desperate the situation they have brought about is. Their manly perseverance is going to, just keep us all in that mess. So I guess I would say that the good parts of manliness do not belong to men. Maybe the bad parts of manliness belong to men. But I would say that the good parts do not. And as for, I was thinking about risk all day yesterday, and I was thinking how many risks women undergo that men do not endure, that men do not are not even aware of, that you know, maybe it looks like women take fewer risks than men because some of the risks women take are invisible. For example, you walk through that dark parking lot to get to your car. That's not something men fear. You go on a blind date. Probably there aren't too many men who think, God, she could be an axe murderer. You know, she could rape me. I think that the everyday heroism of women. Think of all the Filipino women. You know, every year, 750,000 Filipino women leave their country to go work in foreign countries as domestics.
And send home that paycheck, and that takes guts.
And they are keeping that country afloat. That is heroism to me.
Harvey Mansfield, let's look at the Bush administration. Between Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and George W. Bush, there would not seem to be a shortage of this quality that you're holding up here. And yet you're describing a kind of deficit. So what's the math here?
Well, I didn't come here to defend the Bush administration. But I would just point out that if the Democrats want to replace it, they'll have to show manliness, too. And in the last election, John Kerry did his very best to show himself to be a manly man.
The hunting costume, but what are you saying? That wasn't enough?
He came across, I think, as smart rather than manly, and unmanly because he vacillated.
And the courage of women, Katha Pollitt points to a couple of examples. We could think of many. Is it really so different? Is it really so small compared to men's?
Women don't step out and defend others with their heroism.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a call for the return of manly men in an increasingly gender-neutral society. Let's get a little bit of manliness as television commercial in our ear. This stuff plays. Here's a 2002 spot for Swanson's Hungry Man Dinners.
What'd you have for dinner?
Pound and a half of barbecued chicken, boneless pork ribs, mashed potatoes. You?
Piece of quiche, sprouts, and a side salad.
Light the candles. Whoa!
Quiche. Should have had a new Hungry Man XXL. An extra large portion of the food men love. Hungry Man XXL. It's good to be full.
There you go. And the man who ate quiche so slight that when his daughter blew out her birthday candles, he flew right across the room. 800-423-TALK. Peter is calling from Boston. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, how you doing?
Well, what do you think?
Well, listen, I for once found myself almost not believing. I totally believe what this Harvard professor was saying, because most of the times I usually disagree with him.
And what about it is capturing you, Peter?
I think the majority, unfortunately, of your audience are like a Jack Beatty type. So, I mean, first to kind of castigate them. I really believe in manliness, and it should be inculcated in kids. There's a feminization going on. I have a son and a daughter, and I have two grandsons. And I tell you, it's important to kind of, you know, instill with these young kids that, you know, there's virtues of courage, of standing up, of, you know, doing things that are, quote, manliness.
Peter, what's the evidence in your own life? What's the evidence that it's happening? And what's the cost of it, do you see?
Well, okay, my dad was a World War II Army Corps, Army veteran. I was a Marine Corps veteran in Vietnam. I brought my son up with the idea of, hey, you know, you do the right thing. I'll give you a quick illustration. I moved to Belmont, Mass. He was 6 years old. There's a kid that lived down the street who was a little bit older than him. In fact, his dad was a Harvard professor, and he was spitting on my son. My son came in kind of crying, and he said to me, Dad, this is what's happening. I used to take him to the gym and box. I said, hey, that kid spits on you, you do something, or you'll deal with me.
Yeah.
It spit on him, and he popped him. And I said, that's the way you got to do it. Handle it. And that's, I absolutely believe that's the type of thing. He grew up with that type of attitude of just, hey, people, not to beat up on people, but if people are going to hit you and, you know, go after you, that's the way you should do it.
And, Peter, let me ask you, can we have women empowered and still have men
absolutely
who stand up for themselves?
Yes. I think people are vilifying this poor professor. He's not mutually exclusive. There are absolutely good traits of women can obtain similar things. But, for example, like I think the professor defined it, manliness, in my definition, would be somebody who put his life in the line. And to me, the ultimate test was combat. And that's where the Marines, I never had a problem with dealing with manliness.
Most of the guys I were with, hey, that's what the Marine Corps was about warriors.
But you heard the veteran who called and said, this is the path to slaughter.
Well, I disagree. I'm not talking about, like, joining, you know, blindly, you know, like the Nazi, that you're brainwashed, but you have to have people. There's a warrior mentality that you can train and discipline. Now, discipline people, you're not going to have that.
Peter, hang on for a second. Yep. Katha Pollitt, how about it? Our caller Peter says the society is being feminized.
Oh, I don't believe that at all. I don't think society is feminized enough. I mean, I want to say a couple of things. One is, you would never know from all this talk about the feminization of society that men are still running the show. I mean, what percentage of Congress is women? It's like 16%. How many women are on the Supreme Court? Is it not one down from two? Has there ever been a woman president? No. Are women equally represented across the board in positions of power? No. Which sex is the sex that is domestic violencing the other sex? I think men are still pretty powerful. But I want to get back to what Harvey was saying about, women don't defend and fight for anybody, maybe their children, but somehow that doesn't count as their family, et cetera. What about the civil rights movement? I mean, you know, the model of war, that's not the only kind of way.
Okay, let us pick that up. First, Harvey Mansfield on the feminization. Do you think it's happening? Our caller Peter does. Katha Pollitt says, heavens no. And secondly, what about fighting in different ways? Is war the only way? But first, feminization.
Feminization, I think, is happening because the gender-neutral society doesn't establish itself. So it has to teach people that that the sexes are equal, which means, in effect, interchangeable. And in that way, it gives a push to women as opposed to men.
Then why is it still men in all those seats, in all those high chairs?
What Katha said about that is certainly right.
Well, but so if we're gender neutral, we can't be neutral if that's still happening, can we?
We're gender neutral in principle. I think that's our only principle today. There's no way today that a man can look at a woman and say, you're inferior, or you don't deserve to have this or that.
Is that a problem?
Yeah. Yes, I think it is, but it is.
You should be able to say you're inferior, miss?
Yes, you should be able to say that you don't quite have the qualities that men have.
Why inferior? Now we're at the nub of it, maybe.
Why is that inferior?
Even if their qualities are different, why is that inferior?
Because is always a question of inferiority or superiority, as I think was indicated before. The question is whether manliness is all virtue or not, and that I say is definitely not the case. So,
and what about
if you don't have manliness, it doesn't mean that you're lost in life.
And what about alternatives to the manly war? Katha Pollitt says, look, there are other ways to accomplish very important things. Look at the civil rights movement. Look at Rosa Parks. Yeah. What do you say to that?
Certainly women get things accomplished by more indirect means than manliness.
How was Rosa Parks indirect? How was the civil rights movement, which was largely run by women, although men got a lot of the credit, how was that indirect? People got their heads beat in. They got beaten. They got arrested. They got water cannons shot at them. It was tremendous physical courage.
Aren't you talking about the women's movement instead of the civil rights movement?
The civil rights movement was led
by men.
No,
by one man, and in particular, Martin Luther King. Whereas
that's completely not true. That was a big social movement. It wasn't one person standing up and doing
something. It was a big political movement.
It was one person at the head of it.
I want to get another call in here. Margaret's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Margaret. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just think it's time for humanity to get beyond the competition, the bullying, the war. There are too many of us. We're living too close together. We've got to get along and leave the old ways behind.
Does that mean leaving manliness behind, Margaret?
It depends on what you call manliness. Strong men can be gentle. You don't have to bully, and you don't have to go to war. We have to use our intelligence to live a different way.
Harvey Mansfield says manliness entails assertiveness, even stubbornness, craves power and action. Does that fit in your recipe for what's needed now?
Well, we see where that's brought us to. I think it's time for something else. for cooperation instead of competition. We need to grow up.
Harvey?
That's a woman talking.
Well, but,
and that's a typical woman's critique of manliness, and there's a lot of truth in it.
That sounds so condescending.
Yes, I am being a little condescending because...
you're a man.
Yeah, because I'm a man. That's right. And
but how does that fit in with equality and democracy? Are you saying that the successful democracy, then, must always be condescending toward women because of some innate reason?
Yes, I'm saying something like that. That's not putting the best face on it. I would say a successful democracy has to respect the differences between men and women and the fact that men have manliness more than women do.
What about the record,
and that
Margaret?
Manliness, though not all virtue, is sometimes absolutely necessary.
Margaret calls from Nashville and says, "Look at history; it's bloody. We need to evolve here." Her phrase, "grow up." Have you no sympathy for that view?
I said I had sympathy for it.
Yeah, but you want
to... When I labeled it as a typical woman's criticism, that was meant to be a compliment.
I see. That's a compliment, and yet condescending. Yeah. Sean's calling from Albany, Georgia. Hi, Sean. You're on the air.
Good. How are you?
Well, good. What do you think, Sean?
I would like to say that I agree with the professor. To me, though, it extends beyond gender, and I think that it extends to the Western culture. It seems to me that after World War II that we have sort of gone out of our way to be less manly. And I think that if the West does not regain some of the manliness, that it is in jeopardy. That's my comment.
Sean, but if you look at World War II and look at World War I, those huge conflicts, can you not see why some people on the planet thought after those two, let's crank down the manliness all around here a little bit?
Yes, I can understand they're very bloody, and they took a toll on the Western world, very much so. But still, we had to fight for what we believed in, and in order to do that, sometimes you have to take a hit. But I do think that the Western culture is in jeopardy because it is less manly.
Sean, we appreciate your call. Jack Beatty, here it is. You can hear people wanting to move forward, but some saying, look, we've got to evolve away from this aggression to do that. Others saying, we're going to be weakened and find our downfall if we don't bring the aggression with us.
In the 19th century, manly was a word used all the time. It was used a lot by working people, and it meant resisting the boss. And it was used by farmers, and it meant being autonomous, being economically independent. And then there was a crisis of manliness, and it was introduced by industrial capitalism that made people employees, that put hierarchies over them.
Punching
and that
a clock.
Continues to be one of the crises that against human autonomy and the desire for independence and freedom, that continues and that intensifies. And today, indeed, people have less control over their economic lives than ever. Lincoln would have looked at this and said, my gosh, you can't live that way. People have to be economically autonomous. When we lost that dream, we lost a kind of, I won't call it manliness, something that's available to all people, but that's something that is under assault for all people today by globalization and hierarchy.
So you approve of manliness, Jack, if it's fierceness on a picket line, but not if it's fierceness on a border or a military outpost?
Well, all I'm saying is that the crisis in autonomy or in independence or freedom, whatever you want to call it, is not introduced by women challenging men, but by industrial capitalism and globalism challenging everybody.
Deb's calling from Belchertown, Massachusetts. Hi, Deb. You're on the air.
Hi. I just was I'm a little concerned, that I hear a lot of fear in Professor Mansfield's thesis. Fear a backlash about Maureen Dowd, are men necessary? My wife and I are raising a son, and I'm worried about the biological, non-necessity of men.
You're worried about it. Your wife and so you're a lesbian couple raising a son, and what's your worry exactly?
Well, I want to make sure that my son grows up with confidence and feeling good about himself, but knowing that sort of manliness as we used to look at it has sort of outlived its biological necessity. So I'm looking for a different way to teach him to feel confident about being a young man.
And do you find yourself thinking twice at all when you listen to Harvey Mansfield and he says, look, there are certain things innate in the genders, and we've got to recognize them, or we're shoving ourselves into
to, you know, constructs that don't work. Do you worry about that for your son?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, I don't see that sort of manliness in him. And I don't, I mean, I just don't think it's in his nature, but I want him to be confident and proud.
You're going to buy the book for him, Harvey's book, Manliness?
No, I don't think so.
Well, Deb, thanks for your call. Katha Pollitt.
Well, you know, I have a daughter. I want her to be confident and proud. There are lots of things to feel confident about, and I think getting back, you know, Harvey said something very interesting. I forget exactly how this came in, but he contrasted manliness and smartness. Well, I think if there was ever a time in world history when we need more smartness, more brains, more thinking, this is that moment. And I reject the idea that the way for men to feel confident and proud is to put women down. I think that really is like white people feeling, well, no matter what happens to me, I'm still superior to every person of color on the planet. And that, you know, white people are slowly giving that up, and that's really good, and finding that, well, there are other things to feel good about. And I think that men can be smart, men can be strong, men can be brave and courageous and good people, and they can be honest, and they can have feelings and all the rest of it. And it doesn't need to be based on thinking, you know, thank God I'm not a woman.
Harvey, our time is short.
The analogy between sex and race is wrong. Racial stereotypes are wrong, but sexual stereotypes are, on the whole, correct. This has been proven by social psychology, as I point out in my book. And so that's, I think, a fact that we have to adjust to.
But what does that mean? Little woman back to the kitchen, man to the battlefront?
No, certainly not. We're not going to put women back in the kitchen or back in the household. I think that...
You're saying they should do the housework.
They've shown that I think is correct. I don't consider housework mere drudgery. I think it's a job that a woman can be proud of because it has a lot of intelligence.
But a man can't be proud of it.
We've just got a minute left. Give us your thesis. What is at risk, in your view, if this reassertion of manliness, reemployment of it, doesn't take place?
We'll continue with explosions of extreme manliness, because denying manliness won't make it go away. And there will be no understanding on the part of women and even of men why men are manly and why they want to be aggressive and to assert themselves.
Walter Kern of the New York Times says, in just which far-off galaxy has Mansfield set up his telescope to scrutinize the doings of us Earthlings? What do you think about the response you've had so far, Professor Mansfield, to the book and your thesis? What do you make of it?
Well, that was not the most favorable response. We live in a free country, and I wrote a controversial book, and so I expected to get responses like that. They don't particularly bother me or affect me.
A real man.
Ah.
Harvey Mansfield, his new book is Manliness, Professor of Government at Harvard University. Katha Pollitt at The Nation, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Katha Pollitt's forthcoming book is Virginity or Death and Other Social and Political Issues of Our Time. Jack Beatty, a final thought here, my man?
Well, when I think it was David Ben-Gurion appointed Golda Meir to his cabinet, he remarked, she was the best man we had.
and
when Golda was asked about that, she said, that's true, but only a man would think that was funny.
Oh, and here I am laughing. Jack, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.